Welcome to Red Meat, the conservative news update you need from Odyssey stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in. Let's start off with something that'll probably make your blood boil as much as it did mine.
Iranian leaders reportedly devised a new plan to try to assassinate President Trump. Israel shared the information with the U.S. We get an update now. Rich Frankel, former special agent in charge at the FBI and member of the Joint Terrorism Task Force, joining us live.
Yeah, we haven't gotten a lot yet, but the president actually made comments on it to a degree when he was in Turkey, saying that the Iranians, he's the number one target right now, which, to be quite frank, I actually believe that. Iran has targeted him in the past. We know that. We actually had a case here in New York where there was a cell that was operating here, and they wanted to do hostile acts in New York, but they also wanted to assassinate the president, and they were tried and convicted in New York a year ago. So we know that Iran has wanted to do that, and now with the hostilities rising up the way they are and the possibility that there's going to be even greater hostilities going forward, the fact that the president was in Turkey and was so, you know, sort of closer to Iran, there was probably no doubt that Iran wanted to do something like this.
Yeah, from what your sources tell you, Rich, was this a credible assassination plot? We think this was the real deal?
Yeah, from what we're hearing, it was passed on by the Israelis, and it wasn't just, what we call idle chatter, that there was something to this. We don't have all the facts and circumstances, the sources on this, but the understanding is that this was a credible threat, in that it may not be specific as to what they were going to do, but the fact that they were actually making plans and talking about how to assassinate the president is, again, not surprising, and actually is fully expected to come from Iran at this juncture.
Rich, the Secret Service urged the president to fly out of Turkey on the old Air Force One, not the newly retrofitted plane that was gifted by Qatar. Do you see a direct connection between this alleged plot and the instruction to take the old Air Force One out of Turkey?
Yes. They had flown there on the previous, on the new Air Force One. But because of, one, the rise in hostilities, and two, what I believe was, the credible threat from the Israelis about a threat to the president by Iran, the Secret Service wanted to make sure that they had all the available resources on Air Force One that they know about, that they trust, that have been around. The original Air Force One, which is what I'll call it, was built with the purpose of protecting the president. From the ground up, it was always intended to protect the president of the United States. Where the one from Qatar, while it might be a great plane and it might be all updated, it was not built for that purpose, and it's been retrofitted for that purpose. And while everything may work perfectly, it has not been tested over time the way the original Air Force One was, and that's why I think also they wanted to have that that plane flying the president, during this increased threat picture and the possible credible threat from the Israelis.
Now, you don't want to test it during the real deal, I suppose.
So Iran is clearly a security threat, but questions are also being raised about something closer to home: ChatGPT. Here's Mark Cox.
We've got Eben Brown with us right now from Fox News Radio. So what is the latest over there? I know that there were some more sorties last night. I know that's what they used to call them. I haven't heard him use that phrase as often this time around.
What's really interesting isn't that we might have flown missions, is that the Emiratis and the Jordanians and the Kuwaitis did some as well.
Wow.
And that's interesting, because normally, and has been the case for, 50 years in the Gulf, that the Gulf Arab states cower in fear when it comes to Iran. And so to see a number of them say, oh, wait a second, we can hit them, we can do this, that means that there's, a sea change in progress in the order of things over in the Middle East. And that's good. No matter which way you look at it. But yeah, we've been hitting them pretty hard over the past few days, because they violated the agreement. They started striking ships in the Strait of Hormuz. They very specifically hit a Qatari liquid natural gas or liquefied natural gas tanker. And you would think the Qataris would be upset over this because that's their cash crop. And Qatari has spent years, if not decades, running political cover for Iran, the Islamic Republic. And I don't say this to make light of anything, but I do feel that they have some kind of like battered spouse syndrome going on here because Iran hits them pretty hard. And then it's Qatar that comes to the U.S. and says, just talk to them. He's only like that when he's drinking. You know, it's just it's really ridiculous.
Well, I hadn't thought of it that way. That's for sure. But do we know there was some talk of infrastructure being hit? Do we know what they hit?
It looks like oil energy energy production infrastructure. You know, that's usually what we find at Karg Island and Bandar Abbas and all of those places. That is Iran's cash cow. And we had given them a special license to start shipping out their oil again. And we've revoked that since they started firing at ships. But we were going to let them have access and get some money to start rebuilding and start, you know, all of this. Because why? Because President Trump had said, oh, the folks we're dealing with, they're a bit more rational. His opinion has changed over these past couple of days. If you heard him speak from the NATO summit in Turkey, you've heard him call them scum. And there are a lot of people wondering where this President Trump has been the past 8 weeks, because that's the guy we remember. So I think perhaps maybe his patience has run out. And I think it once again proves that it doesn't matter that you've killed off the first layer and the second layer of leadership of the Islamic Republic. Even the third layer is still committed to the death cult that is the Islamic Republic. This is a government that created itself as an apocalyptic death cult. They have, and this is not, doesn't take a, you know, a doctorate in international relations to figure this out, because they say it themselves at every chance they get. You know, we have some idiots on the West who say, no, we just need to talk to them and figure out what their needs are. Yeah. And then the Islamic Republic itself says, no, we want to kill you.
Yeah, don't misunderstand us, please.
Don't misunderstand us. We want to obliterate the United States and Israel and Europe. We want to do this. So, you know, we're going to do it. OK, all right. Well, we'll give you some money for food. No. We're going to use it to build more bombs.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't. I hope Trump doesn't waste J.D. Vance's time trying to go over there pretending like any sort of a negotiation that's an agreement that's put in place is actually going to stand. He just needs to say, look, we're done negotiating with you. You either agree to this and you hold it, or we're going to bomb the crap out of you.
Well, that would work. But it has been the vice president who has been the the push behind the negotiating phase. I think there are other folks who perhaps maybe have a bit more experience with Iran that say you can't negotiate with terrorists.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at. Do I think this gets resolved in a week? No. Perhaps if the president is in fact done, in his words, D-O-N-E done, then maybe we move towards more kinetic warfare. Yes, the price of West Texas Intermediate crude oil, the speculative price, went up a couple bucks overnight. That doesn't necessarily mean your gas prices tomorrow get higher. It might mean so in a couple of weeks, and then in a couple of weeks, things could change again, but that's the nature of this.
Yep, it's a good point. You know, one of the advantages of being a Fox News Radio affiliate is we get to see the rundown and see what stories you guys are covering all day long. And I noticed another story they had you assigned to was this new version of ChatGPT that for some reason the federal government asked them to pause the rollout. Is that correct?
Yeah, this has been the Trump administration thing for the latest versions of a couple of different AI models out there, not just the OpenAI stuff, but from some of the other companies like Anthropic, saying, wait a second, don't release this to the public till we have a chance to take a look at it. We want to make sure that there's no security matters here, because the U.S. government, including U.S. military, is beginning to integrate some of these products of AI. And it's all one big web out there. So you don't want, secrets, let's just say,
right,
or just some proprietary information be accessible via AI somehow by bad actors, whether it's terrorists, whether it's just foreign states that aren't friendly to us. We have had for decades now a problem of China-backed espionage, stealing intellectual property from American companies and government agencies and whatnot. We don't want them, you know, just simply being able to ask its own ChatGPT, hey, tell me what the Americans are working on with this latest weapon.
Yeah.
You know, so that's I mean, I don't know if it would be that simplistic, but
right.
you don't want them to have that capability. So, yes, OpenAI did give the U.S. government a 2-week exclusive access to the latest ChatGPT model, 5.6. But that expired, I believe, yesterday, and it is now rolling out. So if you have, if you're a ChatGPT user, you'll likely be having access to that now. You should update the app to make sure you have the latest and the greatest. And that comes along with the update of GPT Live, which is the module of ChatGPT where you can talk to it and it talks to you. And this latest advancement actually allows you to kind of talk over one another and not to get the conversation lost. And I tried it the other day. It is freaky good.
So did I see that this new version has basically it's enhanced long-term memory. So you could tell ChatGPT about some project you're working on and you could go back weeks or months later and it would remember what you had discussed.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's freaky.
That's freaky, right? Almost as freaky as these Waymo cars. Do you have them yet where you are?
They're coming.
Yeah, they're trying them out.
So we've got them here in Miami. They are widely deployed at this point. And the other day I was driving within a pack of like 6 of them. And I have to tell you this, it was the best driving in Miami I've had. Nobody cut me off. They used the turn signals, changing lanes. They didn't stop short in front of me. And not one of them extended their middle finger at me. I can do this. I'm suddenly very pro automated cabs.
I'll bet you are. That's funny.
On another topic, let's check in on the Charlie Kirk assassin's trial. Here's Tara Serbacius.
Well, video of Lance Twiggs in court, the furry boyfriend of Tyler Robinson.
And you're not saying that because he didn't shave. You're saying that because of a certain fetish.
Yes, he is a furry and went by a furry name. This is a guy whose own family told the UK Daily Mail that he is demonic, is demon influenced, and that's why they kicked him out. He says he was kicked out because he was gay. They say he wasn't. It was because he was evil. He's a bad dude. They didn't go into details about why. But he's fallen out of contact with his family, and now he's a key witness. And he says that Tyler Robinson told him not once but 3 times that he had done it, including putting it in writing. Now, this is where this gets interesting to me. If you, because this guy has been AWOL. Nobody's been able to find him since the shooting, right? Well, you just string the timeline up here. And he says the first time that Tyler Robinson told him, he claims that he had killed Charlie Kirk, was when he woke up. He was waking up the morning of the 11th, September the 11th. And he said he did it, and he said he didn't, you know, he regretted that he had done it. Okay, here's the problem. The shooting was on September 10th. Lance Twiggs didn't call the police. Remember how frantic everybody was trying to catch this guy? They didn't know if he'd strike again. Mm-hmm. They didn't know who he was. You know, everybody's kind of going nuts out there. He didn't call the police. And you got to wonder about that, because remember the way that we got him is that he and his father went down to the station. Basically, as his dad was afraid that they would figure out it was him. He figured out it was him, confronted him. He confessed. He took him down there because his dad was in law enforcement. I mean, he took him down to the station and he confessed again. He didn't want them coming around his son up and his son getting killed in the process. That's why he got him to turn himself in. Lance Twiggs never said a thing to law enforcement. I mean, the immediate reaction should have been, I'm going for my phone as soon as I can. I'm going to turn this guy. And he didn't. And I bet you that's why he's testifying. I mean, because this guy theoretically could have been charged as an accessory. You don't turn around and turn this guy in.
Or at least an accessory after the fact. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that's classic. So that's probably why he's so willing to testify. But think about that. You know how big this is. I mean, that Charlie Kirk thing was everywhere, especially as they're looking, you know, for the killer. You knew and you didn't turn him in? Just, wow, not a bad guy, not a good guy. I still have doubts, and we'll probably, I'm sure we'll never know, Lee, but I have doubts about how much this guy knew about this whole thing.
Yeah.
Because he was, when you, if you read the UK Daily Mail's coverage, they went and found a lot of the friends that would come over, you know, to play these weird games they were playing, like board games, and that it was actually Lance Twiggs who was the very radical one about like transgenderism and furries and all of this stuff. I just have a hard time believing he didn't know, but you know, whatever. But we know this. He knew he didn't, and he didn't turn him in. And he's not being charged, which means obviously the prosecution considers him key to this case. They needed him to testify more than they needed him in prison. So interesting situation. Also, Lee, it's going to be interesting to see if they offer Tyler Robinson a plea deal. They've got great evidence in this case. We've seen more of it. In fact, there's a handwritten note in which he confesses to this. It made his mother gasp in the courtroom when she saw it. It wasn't supposed to actually get out. It wasn't supposed to be presented till the trial, but the video camera that was playing, they mm-hmm. were showing another piece of evidence, accidentally like kind of swiped over it, and you can read it. So he, that would be the fourth time. That's a fourth confession. I mean, they got this guy coming and going.
Yeah.
So normally, if I'm a prosecutor, I'm not playing ball. I'm going, no, I'm not offering you a plea.
Right. Why? Yeah.
Except.
Oh, okay.
I mean, look, I've just been on X. You should see Candace Owens has done so much damage to this case with her crazy conspiracy theories that, and the, as the conspiracy theory goes, Charlie Kirk had said no to his Jewish donors, and so Israel had him killed. And, you know, this guy, Tyler Robinson, he's just the patsy. There was actually really someone else there who did it. She's been on this for months. And believe it or not, it's gained traction. And Megyn Kelly hasn't, she does a podcast too now that's very popular. Megyn Kelly has not been as bad as Candace Owens, but what she had, you know, just directly saying, hey, it was Israel, this is a cover up, blah, blah. But what she has done has been, how do I put it? I guess I could play some of it, but it's very long. What she has done is cast doubts on the official story and that Tyler Robinson, you know, maybe didn't have help from a foreign power. Let's put it that way. And Megyn Kelly, after this, because she's a lawyer, she knows, after this latest evidence just came out, she just tried to do a 180 last couple of days. Saying, no, this evidence is very convincing. No, absolutely, Tyler Robinson did it. She's obviously walking away and trying to isolate herself from what she's done for months. But, Lee, the damage out there from these accounts is so bad. And you know, Candace Owens and Megyn Kelly, I guarantee you these prosecutors are considering, have at least talked over a plea deal where they normally wouldn't. Because again, it's only going to take one juror to be pre-convinced by this stuff. And we don't get a conviction. And if they don't get a conviction the first time, then he's going to have a much stronger position. They'll try him again, or, you know, they'll prosecute him again, I should say. He's going to have a much stronger position to demand a better plea deal. All because of Candace Owens. And it's gotten so badly, I don't know if you saw this, that Donald Trump Jr. had to go on Fox News yesterday.
No,
there's no Israel angle here. No, this wasn't, you know, Charlie Kirk wasn't killed because he disobeyed Israel's orders. No, everyone around, you know, Erica Kirk and his organization, they all think that Tyler Robinson did it. Tyler Robinson's dad thinks he did it. That's why he turns him in. Tyler Robinson texted and wrote that he did it. This is not, Israel did not do this. Tyler Robinson isn't confused. Look, now we've got him on video in a sniper's position with the gun on the roof.
Mm-hmm. Multiple times.
Yes.
Both before and after the event.
This should be absolutely rock solid, open and shut case. They should be able to walk in there, try and get the death penalty. No problem. This is one of those cases, you know, max couple hours of deliberation. But Candace Owens has been out there and out there and out there, and Megyn Kelly too, and a couple other people. Tucker Carlson is one of them with the Jew conspiracy. And it's, It's only going to take one juror who's pre-convinced. And I guarantee you, I'm going to go over to the text line right now and somebody will be blasting me for saying this.
Well, of course.
You're just covering up for Israel again. No, Tyler Robinson did it. That's why his dad loaded him in the car and took it.
Speaking of disasters, let's talk about the Dems' choice to run Graham Plattner in Maine. Here's Annie Fry.
Removing a candidate from the ballot is kind of a big deal, and that's why we're talking about it, and that's why we have Hans von Spakovsky here to talk legal with us, Advancing American Freedom, senior legal fellow and frequent guest. I do want to talk about Graham Plattner with you a little bit. This one seems like it's a little easier case because they sort of pressured him out. But now what happens in Maine, and is it different in every state, or is this kind of the same thing we saw federally when they removed Joe Biden?
Well, the rules differ from state to state, but most of them are pretty much the same. If a nominee a slot becomes vacant because the nominee's resigned or died or anything like that, you know, it's too late to hold another primary. So most states, and this is the case in Maine, the law actually gives the Maine Democrats State Committee. So this is the committee that basically runs the party. They have the authority to name a replacement. So it's basically this: all the members of the state committee who choose who the new nominee is going to be. And in Maine, the deadline for them to tell the Secretary of State is the fourth Monday of July, which by my calculations, July 27th. So they got to pick somebody by then. That may seem like an early deadline, but remember, they have to design the ballot, put all the names for all the different offices on there. Then it has to be approved. Then it has to go out to a printer so they can print many, many copies of it. And remember, early voting in Maine starts on October 5th. So those are the deadlines that they've got to work with.
Okay, so that was why these dates are so important. I kept hearing, they got to do it soon if they're going to do it. But what happens if, I mean, hypothetically, you know, a candidate could drop out after that date or could die or something after that date? Would they just have to figure it out? I mean, if they got the ballots all printed, what do they do?
They're still on the ballot.
Oh, they're still on it. So you can't remove them at that point.
No, you can't remove them at that point. And I'd have to jog my memory. But it seems to me, I think that didn't that happen in Missouri?
Yeah, with Mel Carnahan.
Number many, many years ago, it was the death was so late that the name was still on the ballot.
Yeah, and I think they said ahead of time, well, if you vote for Mel Carnahan, you'll be voting for his wife at that point, which is ultimately what happened, and he did win, right, and then she won. So I guess a similar thing would happen in this case. They would just say, well, if you vote for Graham Plattner, you're actually voting for Janet Mills or whatever, something like that.
Right.
So is this very similar, Hans, to what happened with Joe Biden just 2 years ago and Kamala Harris, where it was so close and they were at the nominating convention that they had to do it quickly like that?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. And look, he may have been forced out, but he actually resigned. Remember, he took himself out of the race. And that's when the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, which controls the Democratic Party, had the ability to name a replacement. And of course, they named Kamala Harris. All of that was done quickly in order that states all over the country would be able to replace her name on the ballots for the November election.
Hans, I want to switch gears a little bit here and talk about a subject that you have talked about with Annie, but just kind of rehash a little bit since we're past the Supreme Court session now. Look back on this session and see basically just that marquee decision about birthright citizenship, and I go, this one wasn't great for conservatives. But when I talk to Mark Cox in the Morning, who you know very well as well, he goes, no, man, you got to really look at the big picture here. How do you, Hans, view that decision session? Was it a pretty mixed bag, or was it good for Trump and conservatives?
Look, that birthright citizenship case was a huge disappointment and probably one of the biggest mistakes the Supreme Court has ever made. But When you look at all of the cases, and remember there were, I think, upwards of 80 different decisions, it was actually a big win for conservatives and those who believe actually in the Constitution and the rule of law. In case after case after case, they made a good ruling. I mean, look, think on the very same day as the birthright citizenship case, they released a decision saying it's perfectly legal for states to protect girls and women by preventing biological males from participating in girl and women's athletics. That was the same day. That decision protected girls and women all across the country, not only their safety, but also their ability to compete. And for example, if you're in high school, try to get scholarships to help pay for college.
Yeah, that is a huge ruling. I think I forget about that one because it was the same day as birthright citizenship.
Right.
And it didn't get the attention that birthright citizenship did. But I want to ask, I'm kind of putting you on the spot here a little bit, but is there anything from, you know, you said 80 decisions there. Is there anything that we as media people are kind of overlooking? There's, you know, you had the marquee ones, you had the headline ones, but is there anything that we missed that you're like, oh, this one actually needs more attention because it was a really good or conversely really bad decision that's going to impact us in ways that maybe we don't know yet?
Well, given that we were just talking about the elections in May and we have elections coming up in November, the other big disappointment was the decision they released saying, and again, unfortunately, this was Amy Coney Barrett once again joining with the Chief Justice and saying that it's okay for states to allow mail-in or absentee ballots to come in after Election Day and to keep counting them. That affects a large number of states across the country. It leads to huge delays in us finding out who won an election, and it provides all kinds of opportunities, frankly, for confusion, and I think opportunities for fraud that could have ended if they had come out with the correct decision. This was not the correct decision.
So they basically deferred to the states on that. And that seems to be, from my recollection, what they're, even somebody like Barrett, who she said, well, you know, it's sort of not my role. It's more the state's role to do this. Is that right?
Well, yeah, except that, remember, what they were arguing about was the federal statutes that set the date for the federal election.
Yeah.
And the whole claim was that, look, those laws say that the federal election day is the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. And by the end of that day, election day, all the ballots need to be in the hands of election officials. So her saying that, oh, no, that's not what it means, and it's okay for states to continue to allow ballots to come in, I think she misread that statute.
It sounds like it. I mean, that sounds like it's real easy to say, well, election day ends on election day. So there's not really a lot of room for error there.
Thank you for listening to Red Meat, a collection of conservative audio from Odyssey's talk stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in. Listen wherever you get podcasts and smash that subscribe button.